Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kuf Nun Bet Amud Aleph. Gemara begins Itbar Matnat Shchemira Shekatuv Ba Kinyan. If you have a gift of a Shchemira that has a Kinyan embedded in it, so you would think this would be a simple statement, but the Rashbam already says that nothing here is literal, and therefore he reworks it to explain the Gemara based on some of the questions and the notes that he makes, and therefore reads this slightly differently. And then you have the Balei Tosafot who disagree and take it in a different light. So the first thing you can see in the Rashbam is Al Korcha Bekotev Kol Nechasav Pligei Rabu Shmuel. This machloket we're about to see between Rabbi and Shmuel is only in a case where he gifted all of his property. Because in a case where he gifted all of his property, the kinyan is unnecessary. You can give a matnat shchemira when you give away all your assets. It's a kiktuvim u'misurim dami. It's as if it's written and given over. And there's no requirement for a kinyan. The simple gifting in of itself is sufficient. For that reason, the machloka that comes up now is that when you do have a kinyan, in a situation in which it's unnecessary, what does the kinyan do? Is the kinyan beneficial? Or is the kinyan detrimental? That's where the Rashbam views the machloket. Next thing that the Rashbam says, V'adim, imein katuv kinyan betoch hashtar. Even if there's no kinyan written inside the shtar, ofilu ein kan shtar klal. Even if there's no shtar at all. When he was dividing up, distributing his property. And in addition to that, he gave a kinyan sudar, the mekabel matana. It's just telling you what the normal situation is. So the Rashbam gives you two qualifiers. He explains why. And he says that the Rabbeinu Chananel also has a similar girsa here. Everybody agrees that Matnat Shchemira B'Miktzat requires a kinyan, which is what we concluded with yesterday. Of course, you can't be reopening that situation or that discussion. If that was the conclusion yesterday, you don't bring the discussion afterwards that discusses whether that is or is not the halacha. If you give a psak halacha in the Gemara, that's the end of the sugya. It's not the beginning of the next section of the sugya. So for that reason, he says, you can't be talking about a Matnat Shchemira B'Miktzat, but rather you must be talking about a Matnat Shchemira B'Kula. And the second thing he says is that the idea that it's katuvba, that it's written into a shtar, that is not necessary. That is just telling you about the circumstances or normal circumstances by which people gift. But even if there was nothing written in the shtar, if there was no shtar at all, the question is when there's a kinyan in addition to the matnat shchemira, that additional kinyan, what does it do in these situations? That's what the Rashbam says. The Balei Tosafot say, Perish Rabbeinu Shmuel, Ve'ein nira the Rabbeinu Yitzchak b'Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Yitzchak b'Rabbi Meir disagrees, it's his brother. You always note this for the Balei Tosafot. Rashi had three grandsons through Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yitzchak b'Rabbi Meir, who is the Rivam. There is the Rashbam, Rosh Shmuel b'Rabbi Meir. And then there's Rabbi Yaakov b'Rabbi Meir, who's the Rabbeinu Tam. So over here in this sugya, you have the Rabbeinu Shmuel on one side, and the Rivam, his brother, on the other side. Later on the sugya, you'll get the Rabbeinu Tam as well. So the three brothers are arguing about how this sugya plays out over the next daf. The biggest problem is matnitin, our mishnah. Diktani shchimira shishir karka koshu, a shchimira leaves over any karka, matanato, matana. Then that matana works. But my mairi, what is the situation over there? If there is a kinyan, then you have a problem with the seifa. If there's no kinyan, then you have a problem with the ratio. Later on, we will see the Rabbeinu Tam will try to say that Eino Chanami, that there is an inconsistency between the ratio and the Seifa of the Mishnah. Then he says, V'nir l'ri, the Farish, Demari b'shtar dafka. So that's the first thing he disagrees with the Rashbam, that the situation or circumstance here is definitely about a shtar, and not about any kinyan that happens. V'ayinu taim ed'rav, shesover l'kach katav lo kinyan b'toch ha-shtar, l'alume kocho yoter. The reason that he wrote the kinyan in the shtar was to increase his power in this situation. Even in a situation where he had gifted all of his property, and the Shmuel believes that that shtar is to his detriment, because once you put a kinyan in the shtar, we don't say that that is increasing his strength of ownership here, but rather it means that he possibly was thinking that the shtar would only become effective later on. That's the first thing that the Balei Tosafot say. And then the second they say is that the whole sugya doesn't have to be where you give away all your assets, like the Rabbeinu Shmuel says in Rabbeinu Chanano, but rather yachol la'amida b'tov b'matnat shchemira b'miktzata b'bikula. that even when it is a full gift or a partial gift, the sugya also will be applicable. Whether it's a matnas shkemira b'miksa d'bekula, the fact that it was embedded in the shtar is what's causing the problem here. It's not the normal case of a matnas shkemira b'miksa where you have a kinyan, because of course you need a kinyan. But over here, the kinyan that's written into the shtar, what does the kinyan that's written into the shtar do for you? And that's the machloket here. Bei Rav, Mishmei Rav Amrei, Bei Rav, the Beit Midrash of Rav, say over in the name of Rav, Arkevei Atrei Rikshei, you are straddling two horses, you are riding two horses over here, which means that you get the benefit of both sides. Shmuel Amar, Le'yodana Ma'yodon Ba. Over here, I don't know what I should paskin with regards to this. Bei Rav, Mishmei Rav Amrei, Arkevei Atrei Rikshei, you're riding two horses, you're straddling two horses. Hairoi kematnat bari, bari kematnat shchimira. It has a din of a matnat bari and a matnat shchimira. Hairoi kematnat bari, it has the status of a matnat bari, shim amad enu chuzer. The kinyan here serves to reinforce the gift that it is a final gift and that the gift is irretractable even if you survive from this sickness. Because otherwise, why would you have put a kinyan in the shtar? It's unnecessary for a matnat shchimira to have a kinyan. Must be that you put the kinyan in there in order to increase his retention rights on the property and give him a kinyan, which makes it an irrevocable gift. But it has the power of a matnat shchemira, which is that you can verbally or articulate or even hear write that you want something to happen, even though there's no kinyan. Generally, when you want to transfer the ownership of a halva'ah, it's much more involved. You need to write a shtar. You might need a kinyan mesira. You have to maybe articulate that you're giving over the loan, v'choshi budei. But by a matnat shchemira, you're able just to say, give this loan to so-and-so. Give this outstanding credit note to so-and-so to collect. So in that case, it works like a matnat shchemira, which is, has all the powers of a matnat shchemira. But it also has all the powers of a matnat bari. Or in essence, what Rav is saying, the addition of the kinyan into the shtar is to his benefit, not to his detriment. It increases his power as the recipient of the gift and gives him a better standing in the situation, which means that he can hold on to it even if the person survives. Shmuel Amar, Lo Yadana Ma'adin Ba. Shmuel says, I don't know what to deal with this. Shema Lo Gamar Laknoto Elo Bishtar. Ben Shtar Dachar Mita. So he sees the kinyan being embedded in the shtar as possibly indicating that the shtar itself will function as the kinyan. That the shtar itself will act as the mechanism for the transference of ownership. If you use matnat shchemira, the simple articulation of the fact that you want to give it would be the way that you are transferring the ownership. And that will then invoke the takanat chachamim, which will have the transference of ownership take place after his death. Immediately after his death, the transference will take place. But that involves the takanat chachamim. If you're not using the takanat chachamim, but simply using a shtar, which is a fair way to gift something or to give over ownership, that's fine, as long as you are giving the shtar now for him to be koneh. But the way that the shtar is going to work, or the way that it's documented, is that it's working like a matnat shchemira. And that means that he might be thinking that the shtar is the mechanism of kinyan. If that's true, then it only takes effect after his death, and there's no such thing as a kinyan ashtar after mita, after the death. The truth is, he wrote it before he passed away, so technically you would think it went effective immediately, but the way that the gift is written is that it's written as a matnat shchemira, which means that it's only effective after death. That's the idea of a matnat shchemira. Matnat shchemira says, upon the passing of this individual, all the ownership will transfer to these people, or that will be gifted to these people. That means that there's a delayed effectiveness of the shtar. So had it been that the shtar said mehayom, or had some other language that indicated that it was immediately effective, or even effective now and completed later on, that would be fine. Problem here is that the shtar has a lashon of matnat shchemira, which we know is only effective after death, embedded in it, but then there's also a kinyan embedded in it. And so what Shmuel says is, I don't know what the mindset of the bequeather is over here. Is he thinking, I'm giving a matnat shchemira, and then I'm giving a kinyan to reinforce it, to make it better? Or is he thinking that the matnat shchemira is being effectuated by the kinyan ashtar, which will only happen after he dies, and that you can't do, because the kinyan ashtar is not effective after the death of the individual? So the Gemara says, V'rami d'rav ad'rav, u'd'shmuel d'shmuel. It seems to be a stira between the positions of Rav, and a stira between the positions of Shmuel. The Shalech Ravin Mishmei the Rabbi Abau. So we have Ravin who says over in the name, sends in the name of Rabbi Abau. Havayadei, Sheshalach Rabbi Elazar the Gola. Know that Rabbi Elazar sent to the Gola, Mishum Rabbeinu, in the name of Rabbeinu. We actually had this earlier in the Masechta, and I pointed out there as well that Rabbeinu over here clearly refers to Rav based on the way that the Gemara is bringing this as a question or a stira in Rav. The problem, and it still is a problem over here as well as it was before, which is he is saying that Rabbi Elazar is sending to the Gola. Rabbi Elazar is in Eretz Yisrael. He's a Talmud Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan. And we know from the Gemara that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish saw Rav when they were very young. They were in the way back of Rabbi Shior. And they saw Rav, who was a big gun, at the front of Rabbi Shior. And then he left for Bavel. So how Rabbi Elazar had an interaction with Rav, and that he's saying over Mishum Rabbeinu, that he'd be saying over something from Rav, seems very unusual, or unlikely that he would be saying something over in the name of Rav. As there are very few Memrot and Shas where Amar Rabbi Elazar Amar Rav, where Rabbi Elazar is quoting Rav. But what you have to say is that before Rabbi Elazar made Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, he must have learned by Rav in Bavel, and these small number of Memrot that he has come from his youth in front of Rav. But nevertheless, the Gemara views Rabbeinu over here as being a Memra from Rav. That would make it actually more potent, because he's sending to the Gola from Eretz Yisrael. You should know that Rabbi Elazar sent to the Gola in the past from Rav. And Rav, who's obviously the Morad Atra of the Gola, he's the one that moved to Eretz Yisrael and really established Bavel as a significant place of Torah. So they're saying over from Rav, Shchivera, Shamar, Kidvu Utnu Mane Leploni. If he gave a command to write and gift 100 zuz to so-and-so, umet, and then he passed away, ein kotvin vinotnim. You don't write it and give it. Shema lo gamar laknoto ela bishtar. Because maybe he intended for the gift to be given through the shtar. That's why he said kitvu utnu. Vein shtar lachar mita. And then there is no shtar after death. Had he just said give, he would have been fine. It would have been done. The fact that he said kitvu, that already indicates that he's using a shtar. The question is it a shtar raya, just a shtar to evidence the fact that he had gifted it to this individual? Or is the shtar the mechanism of kinyan? And that would be ineffective over here. And that's what he says. Vein shtar lachar mita. It's ineffective because he said kitvu utnu. So here you see Rav saying that the shtar is acting to his detriment rather than to his benefit. Vamar Yehuda Meshmol, Hilchata kotvim venotim. And here you have Shmuel's position, which is just the opposite, which is you write it and you give it, even after mitah. So you see that Shmuel thinks that the shtar is simply a shtar raya, or a reinforcement of the gift that was given, but it is not the vehicle of kinyan, and therefore there's no problem of ein kinyan achar mitah or ein shtar achar mitah. Kasha the Rav, kasha the Shmuel ad the Shmuel. The Rav ad the Rav lo kasha, that's not a steer in Rav's position. Ha de kanomine, ha de lo kanomine. It depends on whether there was a kinyan involved or there was not a kinyan involved. So in the case where the shtar has a kinyan embedded in it, and again the Rashbam says over there, vuadin the kinyan below ktiva, that's even a kinyan without writing down, kevin de akne be kinyan, since he gave it to him with a kinyan, lepayapot kochodu davad, he's doing that to strengthen his position or reinforce the position, that the gift is not only a gift of Shchiv Meirah, but it has additional bells and whistles associated with it, which gives it the rights of a Matnat Bari, which is that it's an irreversible gift. But in the case here, it says, Kitvu Vitnu. There's no Kinyan over here. The only thing you have over here is a shtar. The shtar that he's trying to give over in order to effectuate the gift. So here you're missing any form of Kinyan. So in a case where the shtar has a kinyan embedded in it, or there was a kinyan done according to the Rashbam, in that situation, then that is done to reinforce, to increase the rights of the recipient, and that's why over there he says that it becomes an irreversible gift. Over here, we don't see any additional information being put in. He simply said, write a shtar and give it to him. That didn't say that there was a kinyan embedded in the shtar. It doesn't say that there was a kinyan outside of the shtar. It simply says, write a shtar and give it to him, which makes it look like he's using the shtar as the way to give him the property. And in shtar, lachar mitah, in kinyan, lachar mitah. The Shmuel lo kasho. Also, Shmuel's position is not a stira. Depends on the language that is embedded in the shtar. This is, again, something we've seen earlier, and we're going to end today's daf with a similar refrain that we saw earlier, which is that if in the shtar it is written that the kinyan here is the yapot et kocho, I had an acquisition from him, and now, and this kinyan is additive, or above and beyond that which was gifted over here, that extraneous language, that language in it itself that says, ah, also, or that it is above and beyond, indicate that the kinyan is not the mechanism of gifting, but rather a strengthening of the existing gift that already took place, irrespective or without this kinyan. So therefore, if it's miyapet kocho, then you're in a better situation. That's what he's saying here, that when he says kitvu tnu, we view it as being something where he's increasing the power of the gift. He's not using the mishtar as a mechanism of kinyan. It's an ukimta in the case, because then you have to assume that he wrote or he articulated the fact that the shtar was going to act or the kinyan was going to act as a benefit to this party, and not that that was the vehicle of acquisition. So now the Gemara continues. Yativ Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak achorei de Rovo. Nachman Bar Yitzchak was sitting behind Rovo. Yativ Rovo kamei de Rav Nachman. And Rovo was sitting in front of Rav Nachman. We have seen this setup before. Rovo is a Talmud of Rav Nachman. And Rav Nachman is a Dayan. And Rovo asks Rav Nachman questions. It could be here that he wasn't exactly in a case. We've seen before when he was in cases. Rav Nachman says to Rovo, please don't question me. I'm in the middle of a case. I'll explain to you everything afterwards. But here they might have been learning. And Rovo is going to pose a question to Rav Nachman. And over here, this is one of the instances where Tosafot brings as a proof to the fact that Stam Rav Nachman in Shas is not Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Because over here you see that you have Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak in the situation in which Stam Rav Nachman is found. And therefore he says that Stam Rav Nachman in Shas is Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov, as opposed to Rashi, who says that Stam Rav Nachman in Shas is Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. And here the Tosafot brings this as one of his proofs, the fact that here you have Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak and Rav Nachman found in a similar circumstance, which would imply that Rav Nachman is not Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Kaboy minei, mi amar Shmuel, shema lo gamar laknoto ele bishtar. You're telling me that Shmuel's position, which was the beginning of today's daf, is that we are worried about the fact that he might have tried to gift it through the shtar, and therefore it wouldn't work. Vein shtar achar mitan. The shtar is not effective after death. Veha amar Rav Yehuda amar Shmuel. Don't we have another memra from Rav Yehuda amar Shmuel? Shchemira shekatav kol nechasav la'acherim. Shchemira that wrote all of his assets to others. Afapi shekano miyado. Even if there is a kinyan there, amad choser. If he survives, he's able to retract it. Biyadua shelo haya kinyan el machmat mita. Because you know here that the kinyan was only because of his death, or that the fact that he was going to die. Or in essence, his death is a trigger for the fact that we assume that everything done here is only in the context of the death. And therefore, if the person dies, it goes through. If he doesn't pass away, if he survives, then you're able to reverse it, even though there was a kinyan. So there you see that Shmuel doesn't say that the kinyan makes us worry about the fact that maybe he's trying to gift it through the shtar, but rather it simply is a part and parcel of the shtar, a reinforcement of the shtar. So then you have a question from Shmuel's original position, which is what we saw, that a kinyan is to the detriment of the recipient. The kinyan makes us worry that that was the mechanism of conveyance, and therefore we say that you didn't get the gift. Over here, it sounds like the kinyan is associated with the mita and is a reinforcement of the gift, but not a strengthening of the gift. So say it that way, it's more of a neutral situation here, where the kinyan works in order to have the gift go through, but it doesn't make the gift, like Rav said before, even better, where it becomes like a matnat bari. But at least it is a matnat shchemira. Shmuel said before, lo yadana ma'adumba. I don't know what to do with this. I don't know what the situation is. That's a fake, leaves you in a position where you would not give the gift to the individual. Over here, Shmuel clearly says that the individual will get the gift unless the person survives, and then he can reverse it. Even if there's a kinyan there, he can still reverse it. Rashbam uses this as his proof for the fact that the situation here is speaking about kol nechasav, number one. Right. And number two is shekanomi ado, that the kinyan doesn't have to be embedded in the shtar. Because here they're asking a question on Shmuel's position, and it says, Shmuel, kol nechasav. So they're asking from the case of kol nechasav, so that's number one. And number two is, avopi shekanomi ado, seems to say that the kinyan was outside the shtar, necessarily embedded in the shtar. The fact that Rova is willing to ask a question on Shmuel from this case shows you that must be the situation or the case before. That's what the Rashbam quotes to prove that the case is talking about kol nechasav, and the case is talking about lav dafka shtar. He's saying the fact that he asked from a situation that says kol nechasav implies that the case before was a case of kol nechasav. And number two is that the shtar is lav dafka. This is one of the strong points that the Rashbam uses to indicate what the case was in the first line of the daf, because of the nature of the question or the case in which the question is asked on that first case. Then, so Rav Nachman waved to him, v'ishtik, and Rava went silent. Kikam, after Rav Nachman left, Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak to Rava, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says to Rava, my achveloch. What did he wave to you? What did he indicate to you that all of a sudden you went silent? Amalei miyapet kocho. So Rava answers the question. He realized this question wasn't a strong question, because it's a case of miyapet kochol, a case in which the kinyan is used to strengthen the recipient's gift rather than simply a mechanism of conveyance. So first of all, a number of things to speak about. First of all, achvele biyode, he waved his hands at him. The Rashbam brings two possible interpretations. One interpretation is that he waved his hands to silence him, and that was it. There was nothing indicated through the waving his hands. The other possibility is that the waving of his hands conveyed some sort of information through the waving of his hands, which is that miyapet kocho. He somehow signaled that it meant miyapet kocho, held up a fist. He did something that made it look like he was giving him an answer. So he intuited from the action what the answer was. So there's two possibilities. Either Rava came to the answer himself after he silenced him, or through the waving of his hands, he was able to indicate to him what the answer was. So the answer is similar to the answer that we brought with the stira and Shmuel before, which is that there are two different types of shtarot with kinyanim. There's a shtar with a kinyan in which you do not have this language of miyapet kocho. You don't have the language of af or mosifal, that it is in addition to or is added on the kinyan, but simply the kinyan is embedded in the shtar. That's where Shmuel has his problem and he doesn't know what to do with it. In cases where it's explicit in the shtar that the kinyan was only there to reinforce that which was already done, in that case, Shmuel has no problem that, of course, the gift went effective immediately, not through the shtar. We're not waiting l'achar mitah for the kinyan to take effect. The kinyan here is only to strengthen the position of the individual who is the recipient of the gift, because the language indicates that miyapeh et kocho. Now, even though he believes it's miyapeh et kocho, it's still not strong enough to make it an irreversible gift. So here you have a machloket Rav and Shmuel with regards to a gift that has a kinyan associated with it. Does a gift with a kinyan associated with it mean that it becomes an irreversible gift? Or in the first case, Shmuel says, I don't know what to do with it, and it's not a gift at all. Or in the case where it's miyapet kocho, it strengthens his rights to the gift, but it doesn't give him any more rights in terms of the irreversibility of the gift. You saw that here. That is Ela Machmat Mita, that it's connected to the Mita, and therefore Hilka Choser. He can back out of the gift if he survives from being on his deathbed now. Now you have a Machloket Rav and Shmuel. In general, we have a principle that Halacha K'Rav B'Yisurim, and Halacha K'Shmuel B'Dine. So over here you would think that the Halacha should be like Shmuel, which is the way that most Rishonim review it or read it. Although the Rabbeinu Tam later on makes mention of the fact that possibly the halacha is not like Shmuel over here because he didn't know what to do. So if you have a case where Shmuel doesn't know what to do and Rav has a definitive position, then maybe the halacha should be like Rav over here because he has a definitive position. And we're also going to see that there was a second lashon. There's a different lashon of this whole sugya. And that second lashon is Shmuel giving the psak halacha and not argue on it. So that would make us lean in favor of Rav in that situation because of the fact that Rav has a definitive position, as well as the second Lashon puts Rav as the central figure in terms of the Psak Halacha. Now, Heichi Dami Miyapet Kocho. So now we keep mentioning that Miyapet Kocho is something that even Shmuel will agree adds to the strength of the shtar and does not cause any detriment to the power of the shtar. What is that? So Amar Chista, so this again, we quoted back on Dal Kuflamid Vav, V'kinyona minei mosif amatnata da. That this kinyan is additive, above and beyond the matana that I'm giving, meaning it's been given through a matana, and then the kinyan is on top of that. It's an addition to that. It's not the mechanism, the kinyan, for granting the gift. The kinyan is coming to reinforce the gift that already is gifted through the shtar, through the articulation of the shchiv meira. Okay, so now we move on. The next case. Pshita. Katav lazeh, vikatav lazeh. If he writes a gift to one party, and then a gift to the other party, Chayinu, this is the case, Tichi Atar Avdimi Amar Daidiki Mevatelet Daidiki, that a Matnat Shchiv Meira through a shtar, one shtar can be Mevatel the other shtar. Again, the word Daidiki, the Rashbam brings here again, like we saw earlier in the Gemara, is an acronym for Da Tehei Mekam, that this should establish it, or this should be the final say, the last will and testament of this individual. So that's a matnat shchiv meira. And so he says through a shtar that this is a matnat shchiv meira, and he changes his mind. And after changing his mind, he writes another shtar, shchiv meira. So in that case, whichever is the latest of the shtarei, shchiv meira, that is the one that is binding. Because a shchiv meira has a right of retraction. His right of retraction allows him to change who is the recipient of his gift. And here, what you have, a gift given to one, and then a gift given to another, the second one will be the recipient of the gift. That is something that we've spoken about before, and that is the principle that Avdimi told us before, that daidiki mivetelet daidiki. So then, kotov v'zicha lezeh, kotov v'zicha lezeh. A question arises in a case where he wrote the shtar, and then according to the Rashbam, he was masarlo at the shtar. He gave him the shtar, and katav v'zika lezer, and then he wrote the next shtar and gave it to the individual. Two different gifts, two different parties. But over here, not only did he write the shtar or the matnat shchiv meira, he had a kinyan be placed on top of it. So this, in essence, is very similar to the question we started with on today's daf, which is that you have a matnat shchiv meira where the shtar would have been sufficient. Now that he's zika, now that he grants him ownership, according to the Rashbam, through misira, does that kinyan misira, or the handing over the shtar, give him extra rights, or give him better claim to the gift that was granted to him? In essence, does it make the gift irreversible? If that's the situation, you're going to be, should see, and that's what we're going to see now, a machloka between Rav and Shmuel. Just like before, Rav and Shmuel argue about when you have a kinyan, in addition to the matnat shchiv meira, is that beneficial? Does that add rights? That's what Rav said. Or Shmuel says that it's detrimental because it might be changing the mechanism of gifting from a matnat shchiv meira to a kinyan. And that's what's going to fail. And similarly over here, they say the same thing, which is Rav Amar Rishon Kana. The first one gets possession of it. Ari kematnat bari. The kinyan reinforced or strengthened your position by making it not only a matnat shchiv meira, but even a matnat bari, which makes it an irreversible gift. Shmuel Amar Sheni Kana. The second party gets the kinyan. It is a matnat shchiv meira because it was given as a matnat shchiv meira, and then he simply gave over the shtar afterwards, but it remains, in essence, a matnat shchiv meira, and therefore you can reverse it. That's Shmuel's opinion, that even with the kinyan, it doesn't help you. And in cases where the kinyan is embedded in the shtar, or the kinyan is not a kinyan misira, but simply some over kinyan, which looks like it's conveying it, that might even be to your detriment in that situation, because that might be look like he's trying to grant you the gift after mitah, after death, which won't work. In this situation, where the kinyan was just simply handing over the shtar, according to the Rishbam, obviously there, that kinyan is not to your detriment, it's simply giving you the shtar itself, but there is a form of kinyan, and what does that form of kinyan do? Shmuel says, absolutely nothing. It doesn't change the fact that this is a matnat shchiv meira, and a matnat shchiv meira is reversible, or he can change his mind whenever he pleases. I ask, don't we already have this machlok between Rav and Shmuel, which is what I noted for you, that Rav and Shmuel already argued about this on the first question we brought on today's daf, that when you have a kinyan, what does a kinyan do in these situations? So that is the way that the Rashbam reads it. Again, here you have the Rivam, the Rashbam's brother, arguing on him. Baya Tosafot bring over here, Perish Rabbeinu Shmuel Zika Shemasalo et Ashtar, that he gave over the shtar to him. Vikasha the Rabbeinu Yitzchak Rabbi Meir, his brother the Rivam asks, Dim Kain, Akamar Katav Lezeh, Vikatav Lezeh, Hanu Belo Misira. The implications of the statement, the way that the Rashbam is explaining the Gemara is, that the first case is a case where he wrote the shtar, but never gave it to them. The second case is he wrote the shtar and Masar, and he gave it over to them. That's problematic, because we had a Mishnah earlier on, that says if you find a daidiki that is tied to the waist of the niftar, then it's not effective. We ignore the daidiki. Because maybe he wrote it and changed his mind. Or maybe he wrote it and never gave it. So you can't take that shtar and say, oh, look, there's a matnat shchemira, you have to give it over. That's not the case. We don't do that. So if he never handed them the matnat shchemira, then what exactly does it mean? Cut of lazev and cut of lazev. He wrote a shtar to this one, he wrote a shtar to that one. If the shtar is not given, it sounds like it's not an effective shtar at all. There's no matnat shchemira. So then how can you claim that the second case is a case of masar? Because that can't be differentiated from the first case, which also has to be masar. For that reason, the Rambam thinks that the kinyan that we're speaking about over here is not what the Rambam suggests, which is kut of lazeh, and then zika, that he gave it over b'misira, but rather, b'nira lefaresh, kut of zika bo'at nechasim, that he wrote the shtar, and he was mezakeh him the possessions. B'kut of lo shtar v'ziko lo ayyadei acher. He used a third party to grant the gift to him through that third party. If they're metaltalim, in the metaltalim you need someone to take possession for you, and therefore you use a kinyan sudar, or you use a kinyan meshicha, that this person will take possession of these items on your behalf. Or, if it's karke, if it's land, you can say to him, lech chazek uknei, go take possession of it. Vazchut katav betoch hashtar. And that special addition, he wrote or embedded into the shtar. And that's what it means. That's why they argued about this before. The zikoy that is embedded in the shtar is the equivalent of a kinyan. And this is Tosafot the Shita Tam, the Rivam the Shita To, that the whole sugya here is talking about a case where it's in the shtar literally. It's written into the shtar. It's not something that's outside the shtar. So according to the Rivam, the circumstances are here. Kot of lazeh means he wrote the shtar and gave it to that one. He wrote the shtar and gave it to the next one. That's the first case. That's the case where daidiki mevatel daidiki. The second case where it's kotav vezika lazeh, kotav vezika lazeh is a situation in which he wrote the shtar and then he said to so-and-so, take possession of my property on behalf of this other individual. That's zochen shadam shelo b'fanav. You can do that. Person can take possession of property to your benefit. So that's what he does. He takes a third party. Please take, on behalf of the recipient, take possession of these items. Not only did he do that, he embedded in the shtar that that's what he did. Says that the shtar includes language which says, and then I granted him such a gift through a zchiya. So again, that makes it almost identical to the case before, which was the case before had a shtar with a kinyan embedded in it. So that's why the Gemara says, didn't we already see this case before? So again, the Rashbam views it as being the first case where it was just written. The second case is written and then handed over, kinyan mesira. Whereas the Rambam, his brother, believes that the first case is kata lezeh was where he wrote it and gave it. That's the case there. The case over here where it's kata vezika is that he wrote the shtar and then also he gave him an additional kinyan, which is that he gave a third party the right to accept on behalf of this recipient. And that locks it in because now there's a kinyan. And again here, the law is going to be the same. Rav's going to say the kinyan was additive. It only helped you out to lock in the gift so that it's irreversible. Or Shmuel will say that the kinyan is not effective in these situations. And therefore, because we don't know what he meant or what he was intending to do, that's one possibility. Or if it's miyapet kocho, then we still know that it's a matnat shchemira. The kinyan doesn't make it any stronger than a matnat shchemira. Doesn't make it into a matnat bari, and you have a right of retraction. If you have a right of retraction, then you can also change the recipient of the gift. Because that's how Shmuel stipulated it before. If you have a right of retraction, then you also have a right to distribute the assets or reverse the assets even before you survive this situation. Alright, so Gemara says, didn't they already argue about this? That was the case that we brought at the beginning of today's daf. Tzricha, we need both cases. Di itmar baha, if we only had that case, baha kamarav mishum de kono mine. Because in that case, there was a kinyan. Avo baha, dolo kamine, over here where there was no kinyan, ema modile. Maybe over here, he would agree to this position. According to the Rambam, we're differentiating between the case of kinyan versus zika. We're trying to say that maybe zika is a lower form of conveyance than the case of a kinyan. An outright, full-fledged kinyan might be powerful enough, according to Rav, to say that it's an irreversible gift, then it becomes a matnat bari. On the other hand, when you just simply have zikah, which is he's handing him, kinyan misira, over here, he's handing him the shtar, who says that that kinyan is a kinyan where he wants it to strengthen his position? Might be a kinyan, like almost like the criticism of the Balei Tosafot, that he's giving it to him because he has to give it to him. Otherwise, he doesn't know that he got the gift, or he doesn't know that the gift's going to be effective. So maybe over here, the misira is not a powerful enough mechanism to be classified as a kinyan that would make it into the equivalent of a matnat bari. That's why Rav over here has to tell us that even in the case of zikah, it's the same thing. Zikah, whether you say, according to the Balei Tosafot, that it's zikah, yedei acher, according to the Rashbam, that zikah is that he did a kinyan misira, maybe that zikah is not a yipui kolach. Maybe that is not strengthening his possession like a kinyan over here. Balei Tosafot are going to explain, over there, it was a kinyan from party to party. The bequeather gave the kinyan, and the recipient was the other side of that kinyan. Over here, it was zikah yedei acher. He granted him the rights to a third party. He said, third party, take possession of this on behalf of the recipient. And so what you would think is that maybe Rav requires a kinyan that is face-to-face or between the two parties in order to make it so strong that it's like a matnat bari. But if he does it through a third party, maybe it doesn't have that strength, even though it's a full-fledged kinyan, and halachically it would work as a kinyan. But maybe in this circumstance, we wouldn't look at that as being a extra right that is being granted to the recipient because the recipient wasn't involved. It was done through a third party. So that's why we have to bring this case over here to tell you that even in this case, Rav thinks that this is a kinyan that is effective in locking in the situation. And the other way around, if we only had this case and not the case before that we brought at the beginning of today's daf, then the Shmuel, v'yid mar baha, if we only had this case over here, baha kamar Shmuel. Over here, Shmuel says that it's not considered to be a kinyan that locks in the gift and makes it irreversible. Alo baha, the case before, where according to, again, the Rashbam, it was a full-fledged kinyan rather than just a handing over the document. Or for the Balei Tosafot, that was a face-to-face kinyan versus the kinyan through a third party over here. Maybe over there, Shmuel will agree to Rav that that kinyan is so strong that it is a benefit or right that is being extended to the recipient that it becomes a matnat bari, which is an irreversible position. Tricha, and therefore we need both of these statements of Rav and Shmuel in these two cases, because the cases are not identical. They're very similar, but they're not identical, and that difference in them gives you the scope of the positions of Rav, that it applies both to konum yodei or zikalo. And for Shmuel, the same thing. Shmuel's position is whether it was zikalo or even if there was a kinyan, it's still going to Shmuel a reversible gift, number one. And number two is, if it is done in such a manner where it might be that it's embedded in the shtar without being miyapek kocho, it actually might be to his detriment, which is that it might actually ruin the gift because he's trying to convey it lachar mita. Whereas for Rav, the kinyan is there to give additional rights to the recipient to make it into a matnat bari, which is irreversible. The surah manuhachi. In surah, that's the way they had the sugya laid out. So now, the Rishbam does bring over here that there were different views as to what this is speaking about. He says, some say, this is kaya plukto kamaito. It's going back to what we started our daf with, which was, itmar, matnat shkimi rash katuba kinyan, and then we had the machok between Rav and Shmuel. So some say that that's what the people of surah said. But in Pumbadito, they had this machoket in this manner. The Rishbam says, I don't think that's right. First of all, it's not the way that the Gemara does things like this. The Gemara generally, when it has an alternate version, gives you the alternate version right away. And therefore, he says it's referencing to the case that we just brought. The case of Kata v'zika l'zeh, Kata v'zika l'zeh. We had a machlok between Rav and Shmuel in that case. So now, the Gemara says, that's how they learned it in Surah. But in Pumbadito, Batnuachi. This is the way that they had it, which is, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu Bava, Shalchu le mibei Rav l'Shmuel, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu. So they sent from the Beit Midrash of Rav to Shmuel, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, Shchimira, Shekatav kol nechasav la'achirim, Shchimira that wrote or gifted all of his property to someone else, Vikano miyado, and then there was a kinyan that was also done there, effectuated at the time. Mao, what is the din? It's a kinyan on top of the writing of the shtar that gifts the property. The way that the Rashbam reads is Kata v'zika l'rishon v'kano miyado. He was mizakeh to the first one, v'kano miyado, and then he took possession of it. So now that might be a little bit more nuanced, or slightly different than the case that we saw before. Because the case before was a case where it was embedded in the shtar. The Rashbam sees them as being the same thing. When there's a kinyan outside the shtar or inside the shtar, it doesn't make a difference. For the Baal Tosafot, it might make a difference, because before it was a case where it's embedded in the shtar. And over here, it's a case where it's the Kanomi Adol that he took possession of it. So here, the Baal Tosafot, the last Tosafot on the Amud here, says, Perech shekatvu kinyan b'shtar mezikui. That beyond the zikui, he also wrote a kinyan into the shtar, which is Tosafot the Shitatam, who says that dafka, when it's embedded in the shtar, the kinyan, that's where Rav has this position, and therefore he says that the case here is a case where it's embedded in the shtar. But the common denominator between both the Rashbam and the Baal Tosafot is that there's an extra dimension of kinyan over here, which is that you have the Madat Shemira, then you have the Zikui, and then you have the kinyan. And that might be what differentiates Shmuel's position over here from that which we saw previously. Previously, Shmuel said that the shtar itself could be to the detriment of the recipient. And over here, he's saying it's to his betterment. That is because over here, there's a double kinyan, and the double kinyan makes it clear that the kinyanim here are to strengthen the recipient's gift, to have it be effective immediately, and not to the detriment of the party. The Rabbeinu Gershom differentiates this case from the previous case by saying the following. That case before, which we started out the daf today with, was a case where it was written into a shtar. Our case over here is a case where it was given orally. The kinyan mechayim havo. It was a kinyan while he was alive. It was effective immediately. Ein lachar kinyan klum. Over there, there's no chashash anymore because the kinyan was a present kinyan, not embedded in a shtar, bringing up the issue as to whether it would be effective later on or currently. Which clearly means that the Beinu Gershom had an alternate girsa in the Gemara, which didn't say shekatav kol nechasav la'acherim, but rather would have to say that the natan kol nechasav la'acherim, because the differentiating factor in this case from the case we saw earlier is the fact that it's not written into a shtar. Mau shalach lehu, he sends back to them, ein achar kinyan klum. Kinyan is the final say or the final matter in everything. Once there's a kinyan, that ends the rights of the individual who's bequeathing. The recipient now becomes the full-fledged owner of this item. Or in essence, it's a matnat bari, which is an irreversible gift. Yes, so at first, they thought that Shmuel's position here with regards to a kinyan only meant a binding that you can't then change your mind as to who the recipient is. So that he can't now, like a regular matnat shkimira, retract it and then give it to someone else. Over here, he's bound by the gifting to that one party. But on the other hand, for himself, he would be. If he survives, then maybe he would have a right of retraction, or maybe even if now, he might have a retraction of the gift and keep it for himself. So they thought that Shmuel's answer only locked it in as far as this person being the recipient of the gift. But maybe as far as the individual's ability either to retract it, or if he survives to reverse the gift, maybe that would still be intact. So Amar Lo Rav Chista, Chista said, Ki Atah Rav Huna Mikufrei, Persha Ben Le'atzmo Ben Le'acherim. When Rav Chista came, he told us that Rav Huna had said, Rav Huna is a Talmud of Rav, had said that Ben Le'atzmo Ben Le'acherim. Whether it's himself or others, it's a locked-in position. The kinyan reinforces the gift to the point where it becomes a matnat bari, irreversible to grant to other parties, irreversible for him to take back himself, or even if he survives, he does not have a right of retraction over here. So here, the Baal Tosafot said, Rabbeinu Yaakov, Peirush Sugya Zu, B'inyan Acher. The Rabbeinu Tam has a different opinion about the whole Sugya. So you had the Rashbam give you his explanation. His brother, the Rivam, who disagreed with him along the major points along the way. First of all, the first question posed on the Daf about Matnat Shkemei Rash, Katuv Ba Kinyan. Whether that's dafka katuvba, dafka bishtar, that's the view of the Rivam. The Rashbam says, lav dafka kinyan in the shtar, could be a kinyan outside of the shtar. The Rashbam said it was katav kol nechasav. The Rivam says it could be kol nechasav or even mixat nechasav. Both of them would be true. And then in this case, again, they argued about the zika. Katav lezev zika, katav lezev zika. The Rashbam believed the zika was that it was a kinyan misira, that he handed it over to him, and that's why there was a kinyan here. The Rivam disagreed and said there was a full-fledged kinyan, but it was done through ayyadei acher. It was a third party that was taking possession on behalf of the recipient. That's what it means, vizika, because of the fact that you always need misira when you're giving a gift or matnat shkemira. Otherwise, it would not be a daidiki that is binding because it never went to the recipient. So that's how they learned, and they argued along the sugya these major points. The Rabbeinu Tam comes along and says, I have a different view of the sugya. Umayi Rav Shmuel, Elveilu Heicha, She'in Katuv Kinyan B'Shtar, Ela B'Kinyan and Ba'alma. Agrees with the Rashbam, that even when the Kinyan's not in the Shtar, and it's just a Kinyan in general, it would work. Umatznitin, and then he goes on to explain our Mishnah, which is one of the major issues that the Rivam and the Bali Tosafot have under the Rashbam. And he goes to explain the Mishnah, that the Mishnah not necessarily consistent, and his biggest chiddush is, Hadamrina and the El, Daidiki, Mevatela, Daidiki, Biktav Leze, Leze, Hainuk, Shloka, Tavel, Leshem, Shtar. He didn't write it for the purpose of being a Shtar, and Leshem, Tzava'a, Ba'alma. The Daidiki was the instructions, not a Shtar Kinyan. And through that, he's able to solve a number of the stirot that arise from this sugya, both internally and externally, by saying that a Daidiki is not a Shtar Kinyan, but rather a Shtar Tzava'a. And Tosafot over here concludes, number one, Ve'ein ira de lashon daidiki lo mashma l'shtar gamur. Daidiki, which is the word that's used here in this case, obviously refers to a shtar. A daidiki, there's nothing else that a daidiki describes. A daidiki doesn't just mean a matnat shchemira. A daidiki means a matnat shchemira through a shtar. That is the meaning of the words daidiki. Therefore, he rejects the Rabbeinu Tam's view that the case here is not a case where it's embedded in a shtar, but lav dafka in a shtar. Number one. Number two is, Vod Ma De Perish, and the fact that he says that our Mishnah, between the Seifa and the Reisha of our Mishnah, were inconsistent, Ein Nira Klal. That doesn't make sense as well. And then, the last thing he says, Vekasha Ma De Posik Del, and then it's a problem for the Pesach we had before, the Matnat Shchivmer Abi Mikzat by Kinyan. That a Matnat Shchivmer Abi Mikzat requires a Kinyan. O Mishani Matnita in Bintukanu Minei. And we explained that our Mishnah is a case where there was a Kinyan. Im Kain, my area shir, I feel a little shir nami. The way he's explaining the Mishnah that there's a Kinyan there, then why does it matter whether he left over property or didn't leave over property? A Kinyan is binding. Dei nira klal sheyachlok Rav apsak alocha shepasak nuliel. There's no way that Rav is arguing on the psak alocha that we gave before. Rav now is saying that it becomes an irreversible gift, whereas the Gemara before differentiated between a matnat shchemira bekula versus a matnat shchemira b'miksata. Now, if you set it up in a case b'konu minei, if you say that our Mishnah is not in a case where there's a kinyan, that means that Rav is arguing on the way that we explained the Mishnah before. Because Rav is saying when you have a kinyan, it's irreversible, and the Mishnah before is saying is a kinyan is only irreversible when it's b'miksat, but not when it's b'kula. So it can't be that Rav's arguing on that. And for that reason, he rejects this view of the Rabbeinu Tam that explains this sugya, or like this latter case here, by Daidiki in a different manner. Okay, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Kufnin Gimel Amud Aleph.